You're listening to The Daily Traditionalist with Matthew Heidmark at RadioArian.com.
And welcome to the Daily Traditionalist. Today's date is April the 13th, 2017, and you are listening to me, Sven Longshanks. Today I am joined by mysterious fascist Doc Savage. Doc Savage, how are you doing today?
Very good, very good. Glad to be here. It's a bright and bright and sunny day here. Wonderful weather. Feeling good overall. I mean, Easter Sunday is rapidly approaching. And it's not every day that you get to say that that the Lord is risen. So happy Easter to all my comrades out there.
It is. It's a highlight of the Christian year, really. And you would think more would be done about it in Christian countries. Perhaps there is more done about it in Eastern European countries, but there really isn't much going on in Britain. There's Easter egg hunts, but that's about it. You don't hear of any big Easter processions or great gatherings at the church. None of that seems to be going on. I've hardly seen any mention of it at all on the television. Yet we always hear about Ramadan and these various Muslim festivals. They make a big fuss about that. Easter is the focal point of Christianity, the death and resurrection of Christ. We do still hear about Christmas, but they're trying to do away with that. They're trying to get us to talk about happy holidays and winter greetings and all this sort of nonsense. I don't understand why they don't make more of Easter, more of the meaning of it, because it is Christ's victory over death. It's a victorious victorious imagery. The whole story itself is the ultimate victory, really, and something that we can hold up as nationalists, as Europeans, and say we are assured of victory. We are assured of victory for everything that is right, everything that is pure, and everything that adheres to natural law. We know we are going to win, and this was the proof of it, that Christ was resurrected from the dead. You would think more would be made of it, I think, Doc.
Well, and it was in the past, but our European Middle Ages history is terribly inconvenient for the ruling elites today, and at least since the Enlightenment, certainly.
Well, I read something today that was completely rewriting history entirely. I think the article was on Counterpunch, and I don't think it was a satirical article, but it might as well have been. And it was claiming that Negroes are responsible for all our civilization, and during the Middle Ages, the Negroes had this fantastic civilization in Arabia, and these Moors and Arabs were really Negroes, and they brought civilization to Europe at the end of the Dark Ages. Just absolute fantasy world. Absolute fantasy world.
I mean, yeah, the entire concept of a quote-unquote Dark Ages is a fiction created by these very same Enlightenment philosophers who wanted to say that, oh, no, all of this flowering of culture and cathedrals and stained glass windows, all of that beauty of the past, that was dark, that was barbaric, that was superstition. We scientists and philosophers will lead us towards the light. And of course, what they're not telling you is that this light is, of course, the light of Lucifer.
Well, yeah, and back at that time, when we supposedly had these dark ages, when all those cathedrals were being built, I think we had at least half the year off. We didn't have to work. We had all these feast days, and everyone would get in together to help build the cathedral, to help harvest the fields. They didn't have shops selling food. They had a huge grain storehouse to feed people with, and we didn't have a social security system. We had the church there, and the church would own lands, and the peasants would work on the lands, and then they would give the food out to the poor. And the rich, knew that the reason why they were rich was so that they could give to the poor. And the poor, in a certain way, knew that they were providing the chance for the rich to be involved in charity. Charity is one of the virtues. We are supposed to be charitable. If you've been blessed by the Lord with more than everyone else, the reason for that is so that you can share it out to who seems to you to be the most righteous person to receive it. It wasn't a matter of everything was taken in taxes off the rich to then go and hand out to the third world. It was people who deserved to be given money were given money by the wealthy. Those that were lazy, didn't want to do anything, they weren't helped out. And again, and it says that in the New Testament, that who is lazy should not be fed. You have to go out and work to earn your living. Not everyone can do that. And we look after our own, but we shouldn't have to be looking after the third world when they come into our lands. They're just coming here to sponge off us, and particularly these Muslims, they're not just sponging off us now, they're taking our children and trafficking them around the country. Yesterday we had a huge court case in Leeds. 27 Pakistani rapists in court and two females that were aiding and abetting them. And literally hundreds of white children were trafficked by this filth. And the ages of the children that were trafficked were ages between 11 and 17. And these are children. This isn't, when you hear of rape and you hear of somebody that's been raped, you think it's an awful thing and you imagine that it must be some woman that was walking home on her own at night. But this is systematized, organized rape of children, pretty much prepubescent or just moving into adolescence. And then these Pakistanis, these Muslims, prey on these children. And they encourage them to sleep with them. They get them hooked on drugs. And then they prostitute them around their entire community. And this does go right through the whole community. Because it wasn't Muslims that brought these other Muslims to court and went to the police and said, look, we've got these grooming gangs in our community. It wasn't that at all. It was nationalists saying that this was going on. And it was the white victims going to the police and saying this is going on. And the police completely ignored it. It wasn't until there was a huge report into grooming gangs 2 years back with these 1,400 girls in Rotherham that the police have actually done anything at all about this. So the Muslims themselves are not condemning this. They condone it because it's encouraged in the Quran. If all non-Muslims are just there to serve the Muslims, and the worse they treat the non-Muslims, the better, because it encourages the non-Muslims to convert to Islam. That's the line of thinking. And as far as sleeping with these children, don't forget, age 11, the perfect man, Muhammad, if you look to him for his example, he had his wife Aisha when she was 9 years old. 9 years old. And they think this is perfectly okay, this is perfectly fine. And that runs right the way through all the Muslim cultures in all the Islamic countries. Turkey is trying to go backwards and re-legalize these child marriages. You find them, they occur all over the Muslim world. We've got countries like Sweden and Germany that are making exceptions for this and allowing these Muslim refugees to have their child brides in their beds with them, in their dormitories with them, when they're in these refugee centers. We're just allowing this to go on. We're condoning it, and it's absolutely sick. And I was just so pleased to see yesterday that at least we got 27 of them in court, and Tommy Robinson was there, and every single one of them he was going up to and calling them what they are, a nonce, a rapist, a child abuser. And there should have been more people there to do that. I heard about this on the news, as I say, and saw that he was there and he was taking a stand for white people. But this is nothing new. This has gone on since the start of Islam. They've taken white girls and white women as slaves and taken them to their slave markets. And this runs right the way through Islam, and it runs right the way through Negro society as well. In Libya at the moment, they've now got a slave problem. They've got slaves being openly sold in the markets of Libya. because this is the way that the non-whites behave. This human rights idea that we white people have, that we have extended to the non-whites, is just being abused by them. The thought would never cross their mind to come up with something like human rights. We should not be applying our own laws to them. They should not be in our countries. And Islam is entirely incompatible with Christendom, with Western civilization. I don't know if you've got any thoughts on this, Doc.
Well, I mean, just the description of what has happened is just so... I get so angry. I get so angry, and my blood pressure rises, and I get to the point where I can't even see straight thinking about this. I don't understand why there aren't riots right now. Like these, we're not just talking about our women, and yes, I mean to say it that way, our women. But these are our children, for crying out loud.
That's the point, isn't it? It's totally different. It's not like it's women that they're trafficking. It's children. That they see a young white child as prey. They see them as somebody that they should corrupt, that they can use as a sex toy, that they can pass around their entire community. And that's perfectly fine. That's perfectly fine because... The white
not,
child
not just
isn't
fine,
a Muslim.
But that is commendable in their society. This for them, when they corrupt our youth, that is victory over us white people, over people that they view as subhuman, right?
It's
they
a virtuous
are
act for
our
them.
Enemies at a fundamental level, and until we realize that and act upon that, they're going to have their way with us.
Well, we need our churchmen to speak out against this. I can't think of any people in the church that have actually spoken out against this, what's going on, or drawn attention to the fact that this has gone on in the past, and that this was the reason that we went on these crusades. It was because Islam was invading Europe and stealing white people away to enslave them and sell them in the Middle East. And the Middle East used to be Middle Europe. The center of Europe used to be Constantinople. And these Muslims encroached on Europe. They were sent out in boats from Africa. They even got as far as Iceland, and they would just ram these boats up the beach, run onto the land, and snatch everything that they could find, snatch all the people that they could find. They would just leave the elderly there. And eventually we had enough of this, and we went over there and we fought wars with them. And we had Charles the Hammer Martel that managed to turn them back from France when they were trying to get into France. We got the gates of Vienna. Constantly, for the last 1400 years, Islam has been trying to invade Europe and has been taking the European people as slaves. And this is exactly what's going on now in our major cities in Britain. In Birmingham, in Rotherham, in Rochester, in Leeds, all the major cities where we have these enclaves of Muslims, we have this grooming gang problem. And yet they still won't report it for what it is. I mean, the BBC report and the Daily Mail report that I've seen have claimed that it's actually given the place where these people were born. It hasn't said they're Pakistanis or Muslims. It said they're from Leeds. Or they're from Bolton. Bolton-born Muhammad, what's his name? You know, they don't actually say from where they're from. As if these are Yorkshiremen that are doing this. But just because they were born in Yorkshire, they're exactly the same as the white Yorkshiremen born and bred that have been there since the year dot. They won't face up to it.
Well, they literally cannot conceive these leftists. They cannot conceive of a world where blood and soil are meaningful, aren't just arbitrary lines on a map, just paper fictions. They don't live in reality, fundamentally. They live in a abstract thought world of their own creation. They live in a virtual reality. And I think they're so far gone that they won't even wake up when, you know, when brown savages are torturing them to death. They'll, well, they'll still be thinking, oh, at least I wasn't a racist.
Well, they're already having to compromise on a lot of their principles because of terrorism. They're now calling for the police to be armed. They're calling for all our internet history to be logged. They're calling for censorship on the web. And these are all key planks of liberal ideology, is that people should be free to do whatever they want, and they should that nobody should have any guns. And yet they're already having to change their principles, compromising their principles, just so that they can try and pretend that diversity is fine and everything is okay. But what really gets me is that the church doesn't speak about this. We've got our own churchmen. We've got Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson. We've got Bishop Williamson. We've got Christian identity people, Christian identity teachers that will speak out. We've got Florin Geyer who's studying to become a priest. We've got our own people like that who are speaking out against this, but we haven't actually got anyone that is actually in part of a church somewhere that is speaking up against this. The closest we've got to it, we've got the previous Archbishop, I think his name is Archbishop Carey, and what he has said is that these UN refugee camps, Christians won't go anywhere near them because they're being discriminated against. If they don't accept Muslim customs, if they don't pray to Allah five times a day, then they're not given any food. And they'll be mugged, and they'll be treated in the same way as Islam says that you have to treat these non-believers. And this is happening in all those refugee camps. This is why all the refugee camps are filled with Muslims. It's Christians in the Middle East that are being persecuted. It's the Coptic Christians in Egypt. It's the Syrian Christians in Syria. The Syrian Christians in Syria have dissipated by 90%. There's only 10% of what there was at the start of the Syrian civil war that are still identifying as Christians in Syria. Only 10% of them are left. And they're not in the refugee camps. They haven't been accepted into Europe, because if they try to get into Europe along these routes that these Muslims take, then they'll just get killed by the Muslims. And we've seen them throwing them over the side of the boat for identifying as a Christian. And that is about the only thing that our church leaders will speak about. But that's going on in other lands. What about what is going on in Britain and in Sweden and in Europe right now? What about these grooming gangs that are taking our children? Why aren't the churchmen speaking about that? Why are they bending over backwards for the Muslims? Why are they breaking the commandments to do this? It tells you in the Bible, St. Paul said, if anyone comes to you, bring him another gospel, curse him, especially if that is another gospel that he claims came from an angel. I mean, that is, you couldn't describe Islam better. Muslim Muhammad was supposedly, the Quran was supposedly dictated to him by the angel Gabriel. So that's exactly what Paul is talking about. Somebody coming along saying he's got a new gospel given to him by an angel. We should be cursing him. When they say Muhammad, we should be saying curses be upon his head. And they're not. They're not. They're removing the crucifixes from the churches. They're inviting these Muslims in.
In Italy, they're housing these Muslims in the churches. And then when the parish faithful come to pray, they're being told, oh, no, pray quietly. We can't have you disturbing these poor Muslims sleeping in the pews. It's you're absolutely right, and the reason why the churchmen don't say anything is because they're not our churchmen anymore. And I hate to, it pains me deeply to say this, but what we're seeing is the abomination of desolation. Basically, I mean, the so-called churchmen don't have the faith anymore. They don't really believe. You know, what they believe in is some sort of modernist mishmash of human progress and Whig history and Enlightenment garbage. That's what they believe.
Well, they'll even try and claim that being politically incorrect is a sin. Oh, you must have heard that one.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I'm told all the time that racism, quote unquote, is supposed to be some sort of sin. Give me a break. don't we have enough of a problem living a Christian life without inventing new rules on top of everything else?
Well, it says in the Bible, yeah, God created the nations and he defined the times that the nations would last for, and he defined their boundaries, and in the isles of the Gentiles were the nations divided. There's all this mention of nations right the way throughout the Bible, and the other nations are used to chastise the Israelites of the Old Testament. When they go against God, they get invaded by these other fierce tribes that were around them. And it's exactly the same thing that we're seeing happen now. We disobey God, we've gone against the natural law, we've gone against the natural order, and because of that, our countries are now being invaded by these infidels, these idolaters. That's what they are. And instead of condemning it as idolatry, they have the cheek to say, oh, it's an Abrahamic faith. Judaism, Christianity, and Islam, they're all the same. They're all Abrahamic faiths. And this Abrahamic faith nonsense, you know, I have never read it anywhere until the last 30 years. It has no history behind it whatsoever. Islam was always the enemy of Christendom. And Jewry was always seen as the Jews were cursed. They killed Christ. And this is what Easter is about.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, all you have to do is just listen to the liturgy during Good Friday. I mean, this Friday, go to a high church traditional liturgical service, and you will read how they cried out, "Crucify him! Let his blood be upon us and not upon our descendants." And the early church fathers could not be more clear. Saint John Chrysostom, you know, that to call a synagogue a den of thieves and wolves and devils isn't enough. They're worse than that.
They're brothers in the faith. That's what we're told now. This is what the Pope tells us. This is what the Archbishop of Canterbury tells us. He tells us that the Jews are brothers in the faith. And they'll invite them in.
Elder brothers
elders,
in the faith.
Elders, yeah. Elders. Superiors.
Since when did the Pope teach dispensationalism? Like, what is going on here? It's nuts.
Well, the Pope has said that the Jews don't need to be converted because they have
right.
previous promises to them.
It flies in the face of all historical teaching, of all tradition, and that's how we know that they're not our churchmen anymore. That's how we know that they've abandoned the faith. Because they're not teaching the faith. They're teaching some other gospel.
Well, yeah, I think that's how we have to hold them to account, isn't it? Is by looking at what it says in the Bible, and if the churchmen are going against that, then we have to tell them this. I don't agree that the Jews can be converted anyway, but, you know, I believe when Jesus said they were devils, they are devils. Devils can't repent. But an essential part of Roman Catholicism is to try and convert people to Christianity. And if you say that the Jews don't need to be converted, the Pope isn't saying the Jews don't need to be converted because they're devils. He's saying the Jews don't need to be converted because they are superior to Christians. That's what he's essentially saying, isn't it? The Antichrist is superior to Christ.
That is the only possible interpretation for what he's saying. Exactly so. You know, the implication is only that the quote unquote Old Testament covenants are still valid, that Jews do not have to accept Christ to be saved. Well, the only way that's true is if our Lord lied when he said that the only way to the Father is through him.
And they would have to be direct descendants, which we know they aren't. I mean, they're all right. Mongrelized.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's completely nonsensical from any which way you want to look at it. And You know, we already have a word for Jews of good faith, and that's the Church of Jerusalem. You know, as far as I'm concerned, the Jews that we're going to convert probably already have.
It's just, you know, it was always, they were always seen as idolaters. The Jews and the Muslims were always seen as idolaters. They were worshipping pagan gods, or they were worshipping Satan. They were worshipping devils. I mean, the Jews even used to be depicted with cloven hooves and tails and horns. And anyone that saw a Jew would look behind them for the tail. You know, this is the way that they were thought of. And this is the church that spoke about them like this. And yet today, they'll invite these rabbis into the church. They'll invite the imams into the church. They'll even lie. I mean, I've said this before, but they will even lie and claim that the Book of Psalms is held in common between Muslims, Jews, and Christians. And this was an archbishop that was saying that. How can an archbishop be so uneducated that he thinks that the Talmud includes the Book of Psalms? The old parts of the Old Testament that the Jews claim to follow, in fact, they don't follow it, they just have it on the wall of the synagogue, is just the first five books of the Christian Old Testament. They don't follow it. It's just there as a scroll on the side of the synagogue. They get it down if any Gentiles come in and they look at it. They put it on a table once a year. They don't study it. They don't follow it. It's purely just a decoration, an ornament that they have in their synagogues. And the Muslims don't even have that. They basically warp some of the characters from the Old Testament. They add new stories to them and claim that they know a little bit more about them than the others. And we can tell from this, from the fact that Muslims do that, from the fact that Muhammad did that in his Quran, that he was getting this from these Jews, especially the reports of Christ not actually dying on the cross, and Simon of Cyrene taking his cross, and it was Simon of Cyrene that was actually on the cross. All of this comes from Gnostic Gospels that were fabricated by these Alexandrian Jews. So Islam itself is, or the Quran, comes from these Jewish texts and the Jewish ideas about Christianity, and they're all anti-Christian. They're not brothers in the faith. They're the enemies of the faith, and they always have been the enemies of the faith. And our church leaders have now become the enemies of the faith. But the good news is that the church will withstand against the gates of hell until the end of time. Whether the church leaders do or not is a different matter. And I think this is why we've got, you know, we've got our own researchers and our own church leaders, as it were, that have come to the fore in nationalism, and we can listen to their podcasts and we can study their work online, because we can't get together anymore with a huge group of people in a church and sing these hymns and all be of like mind, because the person that's leading the hymns is going to be a traitor, a heretic, a Muslim lover, a philo-Semitic, when the Jews themselves are the ones that killed Christ. This is the way that that I see it, Doc. I don't know, do you see that the church leaders are going to come around at all? Or do you think we're just going to... obviously, we've still got the church. We've still got the church faithful. We've got the people that still follow the Bible. But I can't see us actually having a full church full of people like we did in the past.
In our lifetimes, we would be lucky to see it, I think. There are small scattered communities that do meet, but they're few and far between. And I do have faith, however, that however bad things might get, and my personal belief is that things are going to get bad. Things are going to get really bad. Things are going to get way worse before they really start to get better. However bad that may be, the faith will survive. And on the other side, we will have a restoration.
And, well, it's like it's gone back to the catacombs, isn't it? Back in the first, second century.
Very much so, yes. That's what it feels like. I mean, just like part of the problem is, let's say that I'm a parish priest and I know all of this. what happens to me if I speak, if I preach this from the pulpit? You know, chances are my bishop is going to have a problem with that. Chances are the federal government's going to have a problem with that. And that can get, that can lead to all sorts of problems for my entire confession when they start threatening to yank, the tax exempt status, for example. That's one of the big ways that the pulpits are controlled in this country is this, this tax exempt status.
If change comes, it's going to have to come from the bottom up, isn't it? It's going to have to come from the roots up to the top rather than coming down
the lay
from the top.
People are going to have to demand change, and they're going to have to vote with their feet, and the priesthood is going to have to hurry up to catch them. There go my people. I must run to catch them.
Well, this is one way, I think. And it's particularly at this time of year that we could have some influence. You know, if any of our listeners do have a church near them, then get yourself along to the church. It's Easter. Get along there for Easter Sunday and remind the people there of what the Jews did to Christ. Remind them of what the Jews are doing today. Remind them of what Muslims are doing today, and demand that the preacher condemn it and condemn all of this and not say that they are brothers in the faith. So that's what I'd like listeners to take away from today's podcast, I think, Doc, is get out there if you can, get to a church and bring these subjects up, even if it's just to the rest of the people that are in the pews. You know, you may not have to bring it out to the priest, to just talk to the people around you about this subject, because you might well find that you get a lot of sympathy from them. Doc, we're coming to the end of the podcast, so I'll say thank you very much for coming on today. I think we've had a really enlightening conversation here. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. Matthew Heimbach will be here tomorrow with Jason Augustus, so have a great day and hail victory.
You've been tuned into The Daily Traditionalist with Matthew Heimbach at Radio Area